Responsibility to settle the problems in full collaboration with all Western people, with all citizens of our homeland, to do everything for the grandiose programs of building the multilaterally developed socialist society to be achieved in the best conditions. I wish to declare this evening in front of our whole nation that as far as I'm concerned, as a devoted son of the people, in my work and the responsibilities entrusted by the party and people, I shall act in all circumstances in the interest of the people, for its well-being and happiness, in the interest of socialist construction, of the country's independence and sovereignty. Nothing is and nothing would be loftier for me than the people, the homeland, the integrity of Romania and socialism. The best answer we can give to the reactionary circles, to those who want to destroy our independence and stop socialist construction in Romania, is our unity, the unity of all, of the entire nation. The fulfillment in the best conditions of the programs of socio-economic development, of firm advance of our free and independent homeland on the path of socialism. Acting with full determination for peace, for collaboration, on the principles of fully equal rights with all nations of the world. I am addressing myself to all citizens of the homeland with a call to give proof of a high patriotic and revolutionary spirit, to understand that what happened in Timișoara are actions timely organized by foreign reactionary circles and espionage agencies, which organize all this against our homeland. Let us act in full responsibility so that no more such situations could be organized and undertaken anywhere in our country. It is necessary, dear comrades and friends, citizens of the Socialist Republic of Armenia, to give proof of the great responsibility and wisdom of our people, which, in the most difficult times, gave heavy sacrifices. Many of the most advanced sons of our nation sacrificed their lives for the independence, for the welfare, for the integrity and construction of socialism in Romania. Nothing should prevent us in our firm action to serve the people, socialism, the bright future of our homeland, of our nation. I'm calling on you, dear comrades and friends, to strengthen collaboration and unity, to do everything for freedom, for the construction of socialism, for the welfare of the people, for the integrity and independence of Romania. We have just broadcast the speech delivered on December the 20th in the evening by the General Secretary of the Romanian Communist Party, President of the Socialist Republic of Romania, Nicolae Ceaușescu, over the Romanian radio and television station. The speech of the General Secretary of the Party, President Nicolae Ceaușescu, was followed with great emotion, with profound interest, and with full approval by our whole nation. Everywhere in the country, on large industrial platforms, in factories and plants, after the radio and television broadcast the speech, their meetings in workshops and production sections, many working people voiced their full approval of the stand and ideas expressed by President Nicolae Ceaușescu, of the firmness with which all attempts are rejected which attack the values of socialism in Romania, the independence and sovereignty of the country. They pledge to tirelessly work with a high patriotic and revolutionary spirit to ensure Romania's unabated advance on the bright road of communism. The participants in the meeting said that they learned with profound indignation about the unfolding of the condemnable actions in Timișoara with a terrorist, clearly fascist, provocative character, which openly aimed at causing disorder in order to destabilize the political and economic situation in the country, to dismember the national territory and stop the cause of Romania's socialist development. The whole country, in close unity around the party and its General Secretary Nicolae Ceaușescu, vehemently condemned any attempts at the revolutionary gains obtained by our people at the integrity, independence and sovereignty of socialist Romania.
any time by the leader and chancellor, as demonstrated at the Nuremberg Party of Congress of 1935, where Hitler proclaimed that each Jew would delegate the solution of the Jewish question under certain conditions exclusively to party authorities, in order to justify the fact that in these pages no distinction is made between the state and the party as executive powers. Quote some decisions which may amply illustrate the impossibility of such a distinction. A decision of the Court of Appeals of Karlsruhe dealt with the confiscation of trade union property by the prosecuting attorney of Berlin. When the court questioned the chief prosecutor as to whether the confiscation was still in force, he replied that he could answer this question only after consultation with the legal department of the German Labor Front. The Durlstay II, a Right Press leader, was appointed by a party order of January 19, 1934. He was to exert free influence and had authority to take all steps necessary for the fulfillment of his tasks, thus authorized by the party. The Right Press locator ousted the editor-in-chief of the newspaper. Although this man was under an irrevocable contract until 1940, an action by the editor for payment of his salary was dismissed. The court held that the order of January 19, 1934 was an order of the Eichader, which, although not issued in the correct form provided by the enabling law of March 24, 1933, must be considered binding for all the state party and private officials affected by the decree, and that the objections made by the plaintiff against the validity of this order ignored the close confidential relationship between the leader and his followers, which is the basis for the unlimited power given to the government in the Fichte of legislation 10. The leader's order of January 10, 1034 was therefore considered to be within the scope of this power. Whether this obviously illogical argument by which the general power of the party leader is derived from the general power granted to the government of the state is deliberate, or whether it is a mere lack of understanding, is irrelevant. The result, however, is that, according to the court, even if the position of press agitator is a party function, the decree of the leader endowed him with certain governmental functions, there are valid objections to the delegation of governmental functions to important party authorities. The validity of the decisions of the Right Press Agitator was not questioned by the Hamburg Appellate Court, which decided that such decisions must be accepted by the court, even if they sum an equitable 12 with dot above t. In contrast to this rather supine capitulation of the duty signer, we find an admirable frankness in a decision of the District Labor Court of Berlin. It concerns an order which had been signed by Hitler and which had never been officially published. According to this court, the leader of the movement IST, the low is IT, once sufficient that the name Adolf Hitler is affixed to the order. 13. The prerogative state. 9. Be the state police outstanding among the executive branches of the absolute dictatorship as the secret state police Gestapo. This body has always been and still is organized in accordance with state law. In Prussia, the functions of the Gestapo are regulated by 3 statutes. The office of the secret police was established in April 1933. The secret state police was transformed into a special police force in November 1933. The general powers of the Gestapo were finally defined by the Prussian Statute of February 1936, which revoked the earlier statutes, Section 7 of the Law of February 10, 1936, besides correcting a printing error, which will be discussed below, and enacting some organizational regulations, contains a provision of substantive law concerning the examination by administrative courts of decrees in matters relating to the Gestapo. Following the Prussian example, the other German states enacted statutes building up secret state police systems. In some German states where the jurisdiction of the administrative courts is regulated by a general clause, every decree issued by an administrative authority was made subject to review by administrative courts. In other states, the courts review the act if the situation is enumerated in the statute regulating the jurisdiction of the administrative courts. Prussia, in the pre-war period, adhered to the latter method but required review of police orders so far as they were explicitly enumerated in the relevant statute. The extent to which changes have occurred in the principles governing the acts of the Gestapo in Prussia and other states will be examined below. 15.3. The abolition of the rule of law, a historical introduction. Since February 28, 1933, Germany has been under martial law. Martial law as such does not necessarily clash with the rule of civil law. Martial law, as it has developed in the constitutional history of the dual state theory of the Ninets and the early 20th century, supplements the rule of law. 80 times when the rule of law is endangered or are disturbed, martial law is invoked to restore the constitutional order necessary for the existence of the rule of law. If we consider the situation which led to the proclamation of a state of martial law as a negation of the rule of law, it can be stated that the constitutional martial law situation is a negation of a negation, whose verb was the restoration of the positive rule of law. The constitutional invocation of the martial law requires that 1. The civil rule of law be threatened or infringed, 2. Martial law be declared with the intention of restoring the rule of law at the earliest possible date, and 3. Martial law remain in force only until the rule of law is restored. The National Socialist coup d'etat consisted in the fact that the National Socialists, as the dominant party in the government, did not prevent but rather caused the infringement of the rule of law to abuse the state of martial law which they had fraudulently promoted in order to abolish the constitution, and 3. Now maintain a state of martial law despite their assurances that Germany, in the midst of a world corrupt with inner strife, is an island of peace. And the island of peace, there is a continual state of martial law. This method was not invented by the Nazis. Such tendencies have frequently appeared in modern history. More than 30 years ago, Figes characterized such methods as Machiavellian. Every nation would allow that there are emergencies in which it is the right and the duty of a government to proclaim a state of leisure and authorize the suppression of the common rules of Rome by the rapid methods of martial law. Now with much of the prerogative state, two methods were utilized in 1633, 300 years before the Reichstag fire. Wallenstein realized that martial law was a particularly useful instrument for the suspension and also for the abolishing of the existing legal order. Carl Schmitt, not without approbation, quotes the following passage of a letter of Wallenstein: "I hope with all my heart that the gentry will be difficult, since this would cause them the loss of all their privileges." 17 AS, early as 1921, Carl Schmitt pointed out the parallel between the privileges of the gentry and by citizens living under the civil rule of law. It is interesting that I ended early 17th century contemporaneous with Wallenstein. An attempt was made by an England TO create the impression of an emergency in order TO provide a legitimate excuse of absolute tyranny. While Parliament was suspended, Charles I tried to raise ship money by asserting that peace was threatened by certain thieves, pirates, and robbers of the sea, as well as Turks, enemies of the Christian name. First ship money writ 163,413. His success, however, was short-lived, and the claim made by Charles I to override the law on a fancied emergency was defeated and the revolution. 19. The Anglo-Saxon world has since then been wary of fancied emergencies. 20. The absence of a similar tradition in Germany has had the most weighty consequences for its constitutional history. For a short period during the March Revolution of 1848 and the reaction following it, there was a certain wariness of the dangers connected with the abuse of martial law. Mitterma here, the most famous liberal German jurist of this period, said, a revolt caused favor to provoke by a ruse of the government party itself may easily serve it as a pretext for suspension of the law. An exaggerated fear which sees the threatening specter of anarchy everywhere may induce the political party, possibly in good faith, to suppress the alleged rebellion by emergency decree. 21. Consequently, in view of this danger, Nietzsche says that we must never use emergency laws as a pretext in order to continue virulence beyond the immediate need of left, warding off a threatened attack. 22. The experience of left, the unsuccessful revolution of 1848, the dual state caused Mitterma here to be the apprehensive of the political dangers of martial law. A Bavarian legal scholar of this period, Ruthart, painted a vivid picture of the condition characteristic of a state of martial law. He explains that war is regulated and restrained by war itself, but when it is over, when the Leidum Laudamus is mixed with Vac Victus, when revenge and hatred are let loose, all laws are suspended of the victor uses them for his own purposes. 23. Attempts to use a temporary emergency as a stopping stone to the establishment of an absolute dictatorship had been made in Germany long before 1933 and were foreseen by Max Weber Venn as early as in the Hohenzollern epoch. Venn National Socialists occasionally admit that the Reichstag that the ensuing temporary ticket on Panzerporkum occasion for the leak of the rule of law. The mouthpieces of National Socialism themselves state that the threat of communism was merely the excuse for the breaking of the old laws. Kemp, a Nazi expert, I am.